Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The 2025 Trump administration has been going back and forth with universities seeking to impose a conservative ideological agenda on higher education throughout their country. Universities like Princeton and Columbia were some of the first targets, more recently, Harvard University. In a lawsuit filed in April, Harvard fights back, arguing that the Trump administration's actions are unconstitutional. With higher education under threat across the country, we wanted to hear what some voices from Portland State University had to say.
What is your name, my friend?
My name's Quinn.
What is your name?
My name is Faith.
Okay, what is your name?
Isaac.
What is your name?
I am Milo Loza.
What is your name?
I'm Eli.
What is your name, my friend?
Torrent.
On April 11th, the U.S. Department of Education sent a letter to Harvard University with a list of demands. They included ceasing the use of diversity, equity, and inclusion in admissions and hiring, limiting the admissions of international students, requiring Harvard to make an anti-Semitism task force, and audit programs for viewpoint diversity. Harvard refused. The Trump administration then froze their funding. And in response, Harvard has sued them back, saying the freeze violates their First Amendment rights. What do you think about this, and is it a cause for concern, and why?
I definitely think it's a cause for concern that the current administration wants to roll back efforts to make sure everyone is equally represented and spoken for, and not even spoken for, just have their voices elevated. I mean, any entity is well within their rights to say they don't agree with what the administration is doing and has every right to stand their ground and keep up trying to help the voices that have been suppressed for so long. I think there's definitely concern has been well warranted for what the administration's doing, but I think anyone fighting back, anyone pushing back to any extent is just showing that, you know, even though through the Electoral College Trump and subsequently the administration was put there, it doesn't speak for a majority of the country. And I mean, I think we can see a lot of people, if slowly and maybe a little behind schedule, like coming to realize like what exactly he stands for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think DEI is super important, and the fact that this Trump administration is trying to erase DEI, I personally think it is a tactic to uphold white supremacy in America and create opportunities specifically for white people. And I think that education and colleges are a place for everybody to learn, no matter their background. And I think education is a right for all. And the fact that this administration is trying to maneuver in ways that manipulates universities and colleges on funding basics is just, I just think it's abhorrent. I think it's very wrong. And I think it is a very much a downturn in our current society.
I would say it's a cause for concern. It's obviously the administration interfering with the voices and just the lives of young people in universities. Yeah, it's definitely not a good thing, that's for sure.
It sounds bad, from what I can tell, taking away the thing that prevents discrimination.
Well, I mean, just setting aside the whole, like, political implications of it,
there's kind of the fact that the president doesn't have the right to allocate or deallocate funds. Like, that's, we are in a constitutional crisis right now because only Congress has that ability, and the responsibility of the president under the Constitution is to implement, you know, whatever the law says based on whatever Congress says is the law. Like, it's bad enough that they're, you know, attacking education, but we don't need to wait for the president to just, like, you know, ignore SCOTUS or whatever. Like, we keep on waiting to see, like, oh, when are we going to finally, you know, admit that the Constitution is getting by? Like, the Constitution has been violated. We are in a constitutional crisis. Like, this is a lawless country now. So it's kind of just surprising to me that people are not, like, lighting fires and things now, just because, like, you know, the law doesn't really mean anything if they're able to do that.
I do think it's a little concerning, especially since, you know, it's their university. They should have the right to do what they want to do. They set the policies. I mean, here, you know, Portland State University has the right to set what policies they want for their students and how many international students they want to admit and what kind of diversity policies that they want. So I think it's just a little concerning when you have a big government administration kind of closing down on that and stopping that kind of funding, especially at a Harvard. So, well, yeah, it's pretty concerning, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a cause for concern. The U.S. has such an important role in the world when it comes to higher education. We produce the most significant research anywhere in the world, and much of that contribution comes from students from diverse backgrounds, whether it's domestic or foreign. And much of our education is funded through the federal government. And the reason that it has public funding is because we do research that benefits the public at large, whether it's medicine, public health, the natural sciences. And so when this kind of research gets published, I think it has a greater impact. And when that kind of funding is reduced or when the collaborative efforts are curtailed, I think it has a huge impact on higher education in the United States.
Multiple international students at universities in Oregon have had their visas revoked without explanation, forcing them to leave the country on short notice. The Trump administration demanded that Harvard deny admission to international students who they say are quote-unquote hostile to American values. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important to have international students at American colleges, and why?
Yeah, absolutely. The diversity from throughout the world is what makes the country what it is. I know what they mean by traditional American values, and I think a lot of people are aware of what they really mean, but I would argue that what they state are traditional American values are not actually the values that most Americans hold. I mean, I feel like having international representation is having American representation. There's not one person that can represent all of America because we are so diverse throughout the country.
Yes, I think it's extremely important for international students to be at American colleges. I think it's really important for, again, everybody to have the opportunity to learn no matter background or identity. And I think bringing international students to America can really help in just collaboration and research and diversity. And I think these visas that are getting suddenly revoked without any explanation, without any transparency, is really harmful and really dangerous. It perpetuates harmful stereotypes against people when they label them as hostile, but then they don't give an explanation. It's just very much placing a stereotype on people, and I think it is a very dangerous narrative, and I think it's also leading again towards a white supremacist narrative that America has been, like, uprooted on. It's in the roots of our country, and therefore it will continue on, and we're just seeing this.
It's extremely important. It gives international students a chance to get an education and get an experience that they would not have otherwise. Like, one of my closest friends was an exchange student from Japan. So, like, I don't know, and it's really good for young people to meet people from different places that have different perspectives and different cultures. I think it's extremely important.
Certainly. Because it adds to the diversity, and every international student I meet gives me insight on their country and how my life differs from their own, and gives me a whole different perspective, not only on other places, but on my own life. I have a couple of examples of that too.
that's just obvious, right? Like, yes, we need all sorts of students. Even if you're talking about like keeping the U.S. competitive or whatever, like you're improving the U.S. in the eyes of other countries by, you know, empowering their citizens with, you know, like first class education. So there's not really any downside to accepting students. Again, this is a constitutional crisis. Like, why am I following the laws? Why don't I just punch you in the face right now? There's nothing stopping me if, you know, the government doesn't exist, because the Constitution apparently doesn't exist.
Yeah, I do think it's important, not just for one, to have a diversity of people and culture here, but I mean, if people abroad want to come to the U.S. and study, I think that's what they should do. I mean, it's kind of what our country was founded on, was people coming in, improving our culture and kind of assimilating like into one identity, into the American people. So, you know, we're from all over the place. I mean, I'm mixed race. My grandparents are immigrants, so that revoking student visas, especially, I mean, it doesn't seem like there was really any reason to, unless they're like violent or whatever. But if they're just studying and trying to get further their education, you know, I think it's wrong to revoke student visas just to send them back to the country. I mean, everybody should come here and have the opportunity to learn. So,
first of all, I don't think characterizing international students as having hostile values is appropriate, because everyone has like very different perspectives. Now, I have a unique perspective because I'm a PhD economist. I have taught a lot of students who come from multiple backgrounds, and I can tell you part of what they bring, their scholarship into the classroom, benefits a lot of us Americans as well. And so not only is it disruptive to the higher education learning environment, but I think the whole rhetoric is just completely misguided.
That was what some folks at Portland State University had to say regarding the Trump administration versus higher education. For KBOO News, I'm Dejan.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Joining me in the studio now is Dr. Diane Kaufman, founder of the Hold On for Campaign for Suicide Prevention. She's here to talk with me about the Create Resilience Art Contest for Oregon Youth. Welcome to KBOO News In Depth, Dr. Kaufman.
I'm so glad to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I hope you're the same.
Yes, good. Well, let's start here by talking about your organization, the Hold On campaign. What inspired that? Tell me about the history.
Well, I am a retired child psychiatrist with more than 40 years of experience. Actually, I started as a pediatrician, did my pediatric training, NYU Bellevue. Residency turned right around and did psychiatry and then child psychiatry. Medical director of two programs in the past, infants and young children, a crisis unit. Came to Oregon because I'm originally from the East Coast. I came here about 11 years ago. My interest in suicide prevention combined with art, it is in part from my own life experience as well as professional experience. When I was in medical school, I actually attempted suicide with the full intent to kill myself. I fortunately did not die. I had taken an overdose of prescribed medication, and I became very ill. In my fantasy was falling asleep, not waking up. That did not happen, thankfully. Became very sick, and I contacted my sister. I went to her home. When I started vomiting blood, I was admitted to Mount Sinai Hospital, and stabilized, but I was asked by the psychiatrist if I wanted to be admitted to the psych unit. At that point, it could not be an involuntary admission because I was stable and was no longer suicidal. However, I really think if I had said yes, he would have admitted me to the unit, because why would you ask that question, right? Years later, I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, which is episodes of depression and hypomania. Part of my reason for not choosing to be in the hospital, one, I just wanted to put the whole thing behind me, but I was interested in being a psychiatrist. And this is kind of interesting in a way, because it's like, oh my goodness, how could I be a psychiatrist if I had a mental illness? How could I be a psychiatrist if I was psychiatrically admitted? So even within the field of mental health itself, there can still be silent shame and stigma. And during the course of my professional, well, also personal life, my then father-in-law died by suicide. I had an adult patient die by suicide. When I came here to Oregon, a teenage patient who was being bullied also died by suicide. A friend, a nurse practitioner, also had died by suicide. All this combined in terms of life experiences with also my interest in art. I'm a poet and an artist, and I found a way to express my grief, but also my hope for people to not end their life through the power of poetry, visual art, as well as music and song. And the Hold On campaign is all about the idea, which is if we could only hold on, right, not act on that suicidal thought, then we have a chance to get help. And get things will get better, and we won't kill ourselves. So, and the Hold On campaign uses the power of art to educate, connect, express, and heal. It's fiscally sponsored as a nonprofit through From the Heart Productions.
Okay. Well, coming up in May, the campaign is launching the Create Resilience Youth Art Contest for suicide prevention. You brought me some materials on this. Yes. That we're going to get into here a little bit. Uh-huh. But what does that entail? What is the Create Resilience Art Contest?
Yeah. So the contest actually was inspired around the time of COVID, and mm-hmm. it was initially called If My Words Could Make a Difference, which was the title of an essay I wrote inspired by a young adult patient who shared with me that years before she'd been suicidal in a very severe way, but had never told me. And I wrote an essay about this, and that essay ended up being shared with some high school patients of mine, and one of those shared it with two of their teachers, and one of those teachers shared it with every student in all of their classes. Then I realized this essay, which was comparing mental health and physical health, and why do we feel shamed and not reach out for help, that I realized that essay was of value. And I found out that the Oregon Council of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry had a grant, and the grant was collaboration around mental health. So the original grant back around just before COVID was If My Words Could Make a Difference, same theme of if somebody really listened to you, you knew they were listening and would act on what you said, what would you say about improving youth mental health? Well, COVID happened and everything shut down, and the grant, good idea, but it went nowhere. But I didn't give up on the idea, and it's funded by the Oregon Council of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Initially, there were not cash awards being given out, but I spoke to the council and asked them if it could be made into a contest with awards. It is, and it's sizable, and these awards will be given out. It's $350 first prize, $350, $300, $250, and $250 honorable mentions as well. And we're asking youth 13 years old to 21, does not have to be affiliated with a school, you know, or a youth program, could be, but it could just be an individual, to write either an essay or a poem, a story, a play, something with photography, artwork, anything that's related to improving youth mental health, right? Mm-hmm. And those entries are starting May 1st. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's going to be for a couple of months of entries, May, June, July, up until August the 1st, and there will be a panel of judges, and the winners of the contest will be announced on September the 10th, which is World Suicide Prevention Day. So it's interesting because the contest is not only a way for youth to know, here's a platform. We want to know what you're thinking, right? We want to know what your experience is and your ideas. And in their own expression, that could be helpful to them. Of course, if in the course of doing the creative work or thinking about this, they're feeling in distress, we would want them to tell somebody they trust, call 988. But this is a way also for us to normalize mental health and mental health distress and to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. What you addressed this a little bit, but yeah. I want to ask specifically, what role do you think art plays in having some of these harder conversations?
Well, sometimes we can't find the words. Maybe we're not even aware of quite how we're feeling. But if we listen to a certain song, we might resonate with that. Or if we had some musical abilities or whatever, we could start humming or playing a melody or write a poem, draw a picture of our feelings. And I think in the realm of art, whether that be photography or dance or movement, that's all of human feelings are in art. And you can find company in that. So I think it can break down isolation. Plus, it can be a way to talk about the difficulty through a metaphor, through a symbol. Right. So sometimes, and I want to say that at some point we need to speak a little more directly about what's happening. But sometimes initially speaking through the metaphor can be a way for us to begin a conversation.
I have a little bit of, thinking about why this is pressing right now. Obviously, you mentioned the timeliness of May being Mental Health Month. But also, I wanted to note here that, there's this leak out of the Department of Health and Human Services that indicates that department is cutting funding for a program that helps LGBTQ youth who call the National Suicide and Crisis mm-hmm. Hotline. Just from your expertise, how do you respond to something like that?
Well, I think initially, as you were just telling me, I could feel my heart breaking hearing this. Mm-hmm. However, we can't stay in the heartbreak phase for too long because we have to take action, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of taking action, that could be multifold in terms of being an active citizen, right, and contacting the agency, the legislature, writing letters to the editor, taking that action, as well as on a personal level in terms of one's own mental health. If there are budget cuts, meanwhile, contact 988, contact agencies that are still active.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, in your work, do you encounter myths about suicide prevention, what people maybe think about it that's not quite true?
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. So one can be that we shouldn't talk about it, right? That if I bring that up to somebody, that I'm going to trigger them getting worse and they're going to kill themselves. And if I didn't bring it up, that would be better for the person. But that's absolutely wrong. There's no evidence at all that support that I should not be asking someone, are you okay? You seem like you're not okay. Are you could you share with me what's going on? Are you thinking it would be better not to be alive? And there are community offerings such as the Oregon Health Authority, Lines for Life, other organizations that provide training, like mental health techniques of having a conversation with someone. So I think that we all, in a way, we're all first responders, right? That these are skills that I think we should all have in terms of when we think that someone is in distress, how to talk to them. Something else might be the idea of, well, if they're going to kill themselves, they're going to kill themselves. There's nothing that you can do, right? That's not true either, right? One major factor is that if there's a lethal weapon available, that's going to tremendously increase the risk of a person attempting and potentially actually ending their life by suicide. That's why gun safety is so important. And I'm going to read a statistic which is quoted by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention based on data from the CDC, which was most recent, was 2021. But it states that 75% of firearm deaths were suicide. And 57% of all suicides were by firearms. So in this as well, the sense that a preventable act, right? Lock up the gun, separate the ammunition, make sure your child, and there are instances, tragically, of adults not realizing that the gun is not secure, or not realizing that the child knows the code to open the box, where the child has died by suicide in the family because of a gun that was not left secure, right? And there are organizations also which will provide gun, I guess like a gun safety box, right? Another quote I want to give you is that per these most recent statistics, in Oregon, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death. It's the 11th leading cause across the United States. But here in Oregon, it's the 10th, right? And it's the second leading cause for ages 10 to 24 and 25 to 34. So on the one hand, one could think, well, suicide doesn't happen that often. But I bet if you spoke to individuals, they're going to know, you know, family members, coworkers, loved ones, spouses who died by suicide. And that's not counting the millions of people that attempt suicide. So it's really a public health emergency, and the Create Resilience Youth Art Contest for Suicide Prevention is a way to bring it out in the open, right? And also bring it out in the open of a serious topic, but not in a depressing, hopeless way, but in an inspiring way.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope folks take away from this interview or from the Create Resilience Art Contest? What do you want people to walk away with?
Okay. Well, I would want anyone who's listening to this right now, if they're in distress, right, they feel in crisis, that they're not alone, that life can get better, that the 988 number is the suicide and crisis lifeline number, that it's okay to talk directly about mental health, that mental health is physical health, right? And if we are having difficulty, we deserve to get the help that we need. And that the Create Resilience Youth Art Contest, I think, is a wonderful venture. In order for it to be successful, and I would use the word success is for young people to realize there is this contest, that we do want to know, right? What's on their mind? How do they feel that this, in a sense, a crisis in youth mental health could be rectified? And we're looking to them for some of the ideas and answers, mm-hmm. and that this contest is free of charge. It's going to be very enjoyable. It's across all of Oregon, and someone's going to win a lot of money in this contest.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more about the Create Resilience Art Project, Art Contest, what's the best way for them to do that? Is there a website?
Sure. So I want to give you my email address if anybody has any questions first. It's Diane@holdoncampaign.org, and the website is www.holdoncampaign.org. If on the menu of the website, if you go to Create Resilience, on the drop-down list will be the Youth Mental Health Campaign, and there you'll see the whole page on the contest, and you're able to submit right there.
Well, Dr. Kaufman, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you coming on to talk about this.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Dr. Diane Kaufman from the Hold On Campaign for Suicide Prevention. That organization is putting on an art contest for Oregon youth between the ages of 13 and 21. That starts in May. More information is online at holdoncampaign.org. You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Stay with us.
Ezekiel for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.